Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. The draft is almost here. I feel like we've barely been talking about it on this show. Obviously, you can hear about it all on the Athletic Football Show. And there is one day a week that is my particular favorite this time of year. And that is when this guy, Dane Brugler, and his buddy Lance Zierlein get together and talk draft. Because Dane is our most magnanimous employee at the Athletic. So last week, he published a book for you. I mean, no big deal. He does it every year. It's called The Beast. It's every single draft prospect, every person who will be drafted or who even might be thought of being drafted is written up, broken down, and it's perfect. And then after that, this week, 7-round mock. Dane, I was listening to you and Lance, and Lance was bemoaning the work he had to do on his mock draft for NFL.com. And it was a fine mock draft. It's mock draft 3.0, very important. Right. But then after him complaining about it for 5 minutes, you go, yeah, I put out a 7-round mock this week. And he's like, oh, right.
Yeah, that's how I treated myself after I got done with The Beast. It was, I got to do a 7-rounder. No, but honestly, you know, it's a fun exercise. Let me rephrase, not fun. Fascinating. It's beneficial for me. It really is. Aside from, I think, producing content and, you know, putting out something that I think people will want to read, it helps me really focus on, okay, not just team needs, like, oh, you know, this team needs a tackle, this team needs a receiver, whatever. It's what are the trends? What are certain teams like in terms of scheme, in terms of culture fit, in terms of, this team will not draft this position in the first round, but they will in the fourth. And so it really makes you, it's a thought exercise and it's extensive and it's frustrating, especially when you get through the first four rounds and then you get some late intel on
that. That was what I was going to ask you about. Like you get a piece of information about somebody in the late first and all of a sudden it dominoes everything you've already done in the other three rounds.
Well, and that actually happened. I got through, I was working on the mid fourth round and the first three runs were done. And I got some intel on a team in the top 10, the Jets, and what they were possibly looking to do.
Two in the top 10, right?
Yeah, exactly. 4 and 10. And so it was like, oh, I could just keep it and go, you know, cause it's just one scenario and then wait till the final mock in 2 weeks to do that. But you know what? Let's do it right. Let's see if we can, you know, because there's a domino effect, obviously. You change one pick and the ripples and all that. So, you know, it worked out fine. I'm not going to complain. I have my dream job, so in no way am I ever going to complain about doing this for a living. But it's something it's a really interesting thought exercise to go through all these different scenarios and what could happen. And, like, it's not for accuracy. I mean, one trade is going to happen in the first round in top 10. It's going to screw everything up. So it's not exactly for accuracy, but I do think that it's a realistic approach to how some of these teams are looking at this draft class.
Well, and Lance was really interesting talking about how it felt to him like there was maybe some bait being thrown out there, some chum in the water for somebody to go try to grab Jacksonville's pick. You know, somebody who's in love with Trayvon Walker to go get Jacksonville's pick at one and have them trade down a little bit because they're, you know, they might not be so sold on Trayvon Walker because you have Aiden Hutchinson mocked to them. I want to talk about Trayvon Walker because he's the guy that has generated the most buzz here in the last, you know, month or so, probably since the combine. And it's funny because, you know, watching him play all season, obviously you appreciate how good of a player he is, but you didn't think that's the number one pick in the draft. I just went and watched some of his 2021 highlights. And I am now like, because I had this whole thing in my head of what I was going to, we were going to talk about and the position he plays in that defense, the fact that they lost Adam Anderson in the middle and needed to generate more pass rush, but didn't really scheme up more for him, for Trayvon Walker. And I was like, I watched the highlights. I'm like, oh, no. Maybe he should go number one.
Yeah. And we have to remember NFL teams don't draft production. They draft traits.
Ceiling, yeah.
Yeah, nobody has the traits like Trayvon Walker. And, you know, I took some heat because in my top 100 rankings before the combine back in January, I had Trayvon Walker as my number 6 overall player. So based off of the tape, I thought Trevon Walker was worthy of a top five pick. I thought he was in that conversation. And then he goes to the combine and just totally blows it up. 6'5", 270, and running a 4.51, 35.5-inch arms, under 6'9", and the three cone is just remarkable. So, he did everything, checked every box at the combine. But I think you see that on tape. And the context is so important with him. And it's true with a lot of these Georgia players. You know, Channing Tindall didn't start a single game in his career at Georgia. He's still going to be a day two pick, and he should be.
That's like C.J. Mosley wasn't a starter until the final year at Alabama. And remember, it's the same defense. You can go back and look at the Alabama guys from when Kirby Smart was the D.C. there. And that's what that defense does not generate a ton of pass rush out of the position Walker played. Now, the one that did it for me, Dane, I had forgotten this play completely. There's a play in the Florida game.
He
signed up standing up, and they drop him into the slant zone, and he bats it down.
6'5", 270-pound men should not be able to move like that. I mean, just the fluidity, the body control, and just the awareness to know what is happening behind him and where the quarterback wants to go with the football. I mean, that type of twitch, that type of processing. And, you know, with Trevon Walker, you and this is where I think, you know, the draft guide, the Beast, can really flex its muscles, is when you look at the background and you find out, okay, this guy's been playing football a long time. He played basketball in high school. He led his high school team to 75 straight wins on the basketball court. A couple state championships, had over 1,000 points in his career. Okay, you know, maybe this guy's just an all-around amazing athlete. And the way he fit in that Georgia defense was something exactly what they needed at that time, where he's asked to hold the point of attack. He's asked to lock out, control his man, and shut down his side of the field. And he did that on a consistent basis. But there were spurts where he was either, like you mentioned, against Florida, asked to drop in space, or when he was allowed to rush the passer. There was a couple plays on that Auburn tape that really sold me with him as a pass rusher. And now there is, I think it's fair to be a little apprehensive because – in terms of his pass rush sequence, in terms of his ability to go, you know, the move to move transition,
right?
He's unproven there.
He's not as polished as, say, Kayvon Thibodeau.
Sure,
but have less questions about who he is as a player, snap to snap, than you do Kayvon Thibodeau.
Right, and I think
and obviously it's a different position. Fair.
Yeah, true. And I think with Walker, there's a little more position versatility because you know he can play the five technique. You know he can play more on the edge. You could probably kick him inside. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I'd put him at three in a four down front and let him just kill people, especially if it's an attacking type. You know, if you want a gap shooter.
And that's the perfect, and that's what makes him so appealing, is because you can do, from snap to snap, really mix it up. If you want to go to more of a NASCAR package where you have speed on the edge and then you kick a guy like this inside, that's exactly what you're looking for. So I think it's easy to look at Trevon Walker and see, six sacks last year, and, the win rate is not very high, and be a little apprehensive. I get it, but bet on those traits because, I think you see it on – it's not just the combine. You see it on tape with this guy's ability and what he can do. The context is important with what he was asked to do in that defense.
Well, and one play you pointed out when you were watching some tape of him, I think this was a couple of months ago, there's a play in the national championship game near the end of the first half where I don't remember which Alabama receiver it was, but gets loose.
Yeah.
And Walker comes from the backside of the play where he was completely out of it. He runs 25 yards down the field to make the tackle, chases down a receiver.
If he doesn't, that's probably a touchdown. And this is right before halftime. And so that game, it might be different if that doesn't happen. So, this big grizzly bear who was at the line of scrimmage is able – he doesn't turn it off. It's not just the pure speed, which is amazing – but just the want to, the motor to say, hey, that guy that's 25, 30 yards away from me has the football. I'm going to go get him. And I mean, just amazing to watch. So it's, I don't know. I find it very easy to talk yourself into Trevon Walker. If not at one, the Jacksonville, Detroit 2, Houston 3, I'd be surprised if he fell past that.
Now, I know you don't cover college football for a living, but I'm going to propose a hypothetical that it has been our bar argument for the last about 9 months. Can you imagine if Jermaine Johnson were still on Georgia?
That's it. Yeah. And see, we just got done talking about how that scheme will kind of, you know, hide some guys. Well, Jermaine Johnson, you know, he had enough of that, and he wanted to bet on himself.
You want to be an every down player. That's why he went to Florida State.
Exactly. Yep. And so you did worry about that a little bit. Well, okay, well, now that he's the alpha on that defensive line, now that the snap count's going to double, is he still going to be the same type of player? Well, turns out he was. I mean, he led the ACC in tackles for loss and sacks. And, you know, it's how would we be talking about Jermaine Johnson if he didn't transfer? That's a fascinating conversation.
I will say, now, I'm not sure Georgia would have lost a game. Like, the playoff would have looked different because I think they beat Alabama in the SEC title game, because when Adam Anderson gets yanked off the team, gets arrested, Jermaine Johnson would have been there and actually would have then become the every down player he'd hoped to be.
Right.
So, and would have dominated just as well because he'd have more talent around him. So that's the strange hypothetical there is Georgia's defense would have been more unstoppable.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, it's funny. We're going to see eight Georgia defenders or eight Georgia players go in the top 100 this year. And then you think about everything they have coming back with Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith and the younger guys in the secondary. I mean, it's amazing what that program is turning out right now.
Yeah, that's what everybody's afraid of in the rest of the SEC and Alabama too. And we'll get into it because we're gonna have Dane back after the draft because he gets lonely and folks stop calling. Like right now, Dane has maybe 30 seconds to himself every day. But
30 seconds sounds nice.
Once the draft ends, the phone stops ringing for a minute. So we're gonna have Dane on shortly after the draft, and we're going to talk about all these guys, Bryce Young, Will Anderson, CJ Stroud, Jalen Carter, Tyler Van Dyke, all these people that I'm excited about you draftniks will be excited about next year. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. You have a pick in your 7-round mock in the bottom of the first round. If it happens, it may be my favorite pick in the history of football, if it happens, because it feels too perfect. You ready?
All right, what do you got?
Tyler Linderbaum to the Bengals at 31.
Yeah.
A wide zone scheme team, the ultimate wide zone center, like the greatest wide zone center who ever lived. I'm telling you that right now. That's who he is. Now, I heard Lance talking about, you know, because he hasn't fallen out of the first round and saying, well, he's a zone scheme guy. Listen, this guy could block in a gap scheme too. I know he's not huge, but this is like you were just talking about ceiling, special athleticism. This is like saying Tyreek Hill couldn't be a good receiver because he's too small. Like he's that special from a speed quickness standpoint as an interior offensive lineman. So, but put him on a team that already runs a scheme that favors his athletic traits and put him with Joe Burrow, who looks like the perfect partner for him.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. And the Bengals, they attacked offensive line in free agency, but so they don't have to go offensive line early. They got that covered, but I just don't see how you pass on a guy like Tyler Linderbaum. And I think you're right. He could fit, you know, gap scheme, zone scheme. the one thing you do worry about is just the lack of length, which not so much in the run game. I think he will be a elite level run blocker in the NFL. I think he will become that. Now, in pass protection, I mean, when you have under 32-inch arms and you're going up against a guy like, you know, Perrion Winfrey, who has 35.5-inch arms, I mean, he's going to be able to reach you and get a little bit of push. And that's the worry with going up against NFL level, you know, Chris Jones in Kansas City. You know, when he's able to use those long arms, you know, get inside your body and create a little bit of push, that's where you worry about a guy like Tyler Linderbaum. But he's too good to fall too far. Could he fall out of the first round? I do think it's possible. I think that he'll go early in the second round. The Jets would love to have him there. But I think at the end of the first round, I agree with you. It'd be such a logical fit, such a perfect fit for both sides.
The Jets aren't allowed to have nice things. They can't luck into Tyler Linderbaum. That's not going to happen. You mentioned Perrion Winfrey, and where you have him in your 7-round mock. This is the part of the second round I like to call the Hall of Value. So in three consecutive picks, here's what you got: Perrion Winfrey at 48 to the Bears, Jaquan Brisker, the safety from Penn State, at 49 to the Saints, and then David Ajabo, the edge rusher from Michigan, at 50 to the Chiefs. I love all of these. I think all of these teams would be getting a massive bargain in all of these, because Perrion Winfrey, I remember watching him at the Senior Bowl practices and thinking, okay, this guy is better than what he showed at Oklahoma, because he was being played in a position that didn't really highlight what he can do. Because Alex Grinch, who was the DC at Oklahoma, who's now the DC at USC, he likes to go a little bit smaller on the defensive line. So Perrion Winfrey is deep inside. He does not have to be deep inside. He can be closer, you know, further out on the line of scrimmage. I think he can make some serious impact in the NFL, being able to basically play in position.
Yeah. And that's, you hit the nail on the head. That slanting scheme just really didn't allow him to blossom as an interior rusher. And I think that's what you're getting excited about. Nobody wanted to block this guy at the Senior Bowl practices, because nobody could. I mean, 6'3 and a half, 290 pounds, ran a 4.8 at the combine, 35 and a quarter inch arms. He's so heavy with his hands that he just booms at contact. But he also has the quickness that he can win with that initial burst through gaps as well. So with Perrion Winfrey, he's a problem for blockers. And he's still young. He's just 21 years old. You know, a former JUCO kid, goes to Oklahoma the past 2 years. And you know, I think that he doesn't wow you on tape in that scheme, like you said. But when you look at the traits, you look at what he did the Senior Bowl, it's easy to get excited about him. And then in the mid-second round, I'm with you. That'd be tremendous value for a team like the Browns at 44, the Bears at 48. A lot of those teams are going to be shopping in that second round defensive line aisle. And Winfrey is going to be blinking with red lights.
Well, the Brisker thing too. Brisker was one of my favorite guys to watch last year. I like safeties who just make plays, who are, you know, seemingly all over the field or wherever, not just all over the field. That implies that there's not a rhyme or reason to it. They are where the ball is, basically. And that I love guys like that. The Saints, it's funny because we talk about Sean Payton leaving. What are they going to do offensively? But defensively, they're pretty nasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. And they, you know, now have a defensive-minded head coach. And it'll be interesting. And with Brisker, he's my fifth safety. And so I get all the time, why don't you like Jaquan Brisker? I do like him. It's just, Kyle Hamilton's my one.
Kyle Hamilton's like the surest thing at the top of the first. Like, he's going to be a really good NFL player.
Yeah.
Is his ceiling that high? We don't know, but he's going to be a really good NFL player.
Exactly. And not just because he's 6'4", 220 and can run. I mean, has range, but so much was made of his 40-yard dash. He ran like in the 4.7s at his pro day, but he's so smart. He knows what the offense is doing. So it's like he runs a 4.4 because he gets a head start, because he already knows what's going to happen. So you can look at the 4.59 at the combine or the 4.71 at the pro day and scoff at that. But when you watch the tape and you see that he's already taking two steps before the snap's even made, that tells you exactly what you need to know about Kyle Hamilton and his range. Dax Hill from Michigan, that versatility to be a slot corner, to play split safety, to play everywhere. He's my number two safety. And then Lewis Seen from Georgia, another one of those Bulldogs. By the way, Lewis Seen has my favorite background kind of path to this point that maybe I've ever done. Born in Haiti, grew up in Florida. He learned to play football when he was in Boston, became a top recruit in Texas, and then he became an All-American at Georgia. I mean, it doesn't get much more diverse than
taking
that.
Taking the grand tour for sure.
Yeah. Hey, whatever works, but I think, you know, Lewis Seen, there's a lot of fans around the league with him and what he could be. Jalen Petrie from Baylor, he's my number four. Again, versatility to be a nickel, to be, whatever you want him to be in that secondary. And then Brisker's right there as well as a second-round player. I like what you said, being always around the ball. Throw on that Wisconsin tape. And, you know, that's Exhibit A with what he could do. So Brisker's one of those all-around guys where – he can find the football. He'll run the alley, make plays in the run game. There's a lot you could do with a guy that, you know, can play the run, but it can also play in coverage.
And you had David Ajabo at 50, and this feels like a Jalen Smith kind of thing to me, because Ajabo tore his Achilles at his pro day, probably not going to play this year. But if you're the Chiefs, and this is a position. It's an elite position.
Yeah.
You either got to pay for this. You're going to be too good to draft this. So maybe you grab him and stash him, and maybe you get first round talent in a year.
And the Chiefs have 12 picks this year. They have multiple picks in the first, second, and third rounds. So, I think there's a chance they could package some of those picks to maybe move up in the first round, go get that Jameson Williams or go get a pass rush or whatever. But if they hold on to those picks, this is the perfect type of pick for them because you can afford to stash and develop. And I actually had them going pass rusher in the first round with Boye Mafe out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So they answer that pass rush hole with a guy like that in the first, come back, and if David Ajabo is still on the board at pick 50, well, it's certainly hard to pass up on that and what you think he could be next year for your team. A guy that's, he's only been playing this sport 5 years. But unlike some of these other, quote-unquote raw pass rushers, Ojabo had 11 sacks last year. Yeah. So he knows what he's doing out there. You see a semblance of a rush plan. You see a spin move, a hard chop. You see that he's connecting the dots and knows what he's doing. So I don't know that he's necessarily as raw as some people make him out to be.
Well, I think people were looking at Hutchinson and he was getting all the attention, but go watch that Michigan State game. Like, Ajabo is unstoppable in that game. So yeah. I think a team that has some patience, either they're in a rebuilding mode and can afford to stash him for a year, or a team that's just already good that could afford to stash him for a year and then maybe slide him in to replace somebody that they can't afford to pay. That's the way you do it. But let's go to the most sensitive subject of the draft this year, the quarterbacks. Yeah. You have Kenny Pickett going number 6 to Carolina. We've all heard that, Matt Rhule had him committed at Temple. They know each other, that sort of thing. But I've said, I think there's only one quarterback who's ready to come in and start this year. And you put him in the place where I think he'd be great is Matt Corral. And you had the Seahawks taking him. And I could see him beating out Drew Locke and winning that starting job. It's not that different from the Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn situation where, Russell was a guy. Now, Russell took better care of the football as a college player. But I'm thinking more of Russell at NC State than Russell at Wisconsin, because I think people remember the Russell at Wisconsin. But the NC State Russell showed up at Seattle and was extending plays and everything. That's Matt Corral. Different physically, but that's the guy. So I'm excited to see that. But the Kenny Pickett thing, why did you have him as your first quarterback off the board, and why the Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any conviction about these quarterbacks in terms of where they're going to go. I mean, I don't love these guys, and I find it hard.
Right.
If you're going to draft a quarterback in the first round, I think that you better have conviction that they're going to be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL at some point in their rookie contract. And I find it very hard to be confident in any of these quarterbacks that will come to fruition. So I don't know. I mean, but I was talking to a scout the other day, and he's like, dude, these guys go high. Like, it's going to happen. And so, it's trying to figure out, okay, who's done the most work on these quarterbacks? Where is the need? Where are their connections? And with Carolina at 6, in my opinion, they should draft a left tackle and, either trade for Jimmy G, trade for Baker. I mean, you punt on the quarterback position for another year
But that's what makes this so confusing, is that Baker's out there, Jimmy G's out there. Yeah. You don't have to like these guys.
Sure.
You could go get a guy who's played. And now Baker's on the fifth year option. Jimmy G is a more significant salary hit. But I, at this point, you don't have to promise Baker a new deal.
It's a 1 year prove it deal. And that kind of muddies the water in terms of what's the proper compensation for a guy that's going to play 1 year for you. But it's basically, kicking the can down the road, which I know is not an ideal philosophy, but it's better than drafting a quarterback that, with Kenny Pickett, he can come in tomorrow and help you win football games. No doubt about it. Can he come in and do you see him being the type of quarterback that can help you go to a Super Bowl? That's what you need to be asking yourself. Because if the answer is no, what are we doing here? What's the point? Why are we investing a first round pick in a guy that long term we don't see being able to do that? So these guys are going to go. And so it's trying to figure out where. Carolina at 6, Atlanta 8. I mean, Atlanta is now in full rebuild mode. You know, they passed on Justin Fields and Mac Jones in the first round last year. Are they ready to pass on quarterback again and wait till next year? Or do they love one of these guys like a Malik Willis?
Yeah.
Seattle at 9. They brought in one quarterback for a 30 visit so far, Desmond Ridder, which is interesting that they would do that. But I know, you know, they've had some talks with Matt Corral as well. That's why that fit in the second round, I think, makes a ton of sense. The Saints now with two first round picks is really curious and how they go there. My personal opinion is I don't think they go quarterback. I think they see themselves as a team that's ready to win. They want to get a left tackle. They want to get a wide receiver. They want to get better for the here and now and not draft a quarterback for the future. Steelers at 20, we feel pretty good. They're taking a quarterback. It's just a matter of, does someone fall to them? Do they trade up? And we've seen in the past, you know, they will trade up for the right guy. They did it with Troy Polamalu. They did it with Devin Bush. If there's a player they really like, they will go get him. And so is there a quarterback in this mix that they feel that strongly about? And then you have a few teams later on, you know, the Lions maybe at 32. Could we see a team trade up into the first to get that fifth-year option? So trying to predict where these quarterbacks are going to land is, you know, it was a little more defined last year where we knew one, two, who those were going to be. Three was a little, not quite sure, but we know it's going to be a quarterback. And then we knew that the other two guys were going to go at some point in the top half of round one. This year, it is wide open. So many differing opinions out there. It's really the number one storyline of the first round this year. It's just, where do these quarterbacks go and when does that run start?
We'll be right back after these words. Well, and the Malik Willis thing, you've got him mocked to Atlanta at 8, which I like. So, and I'm thinking about this also, if I'm Arthur Blank, from a marketing, from a you know, how could this all work out if this really works out standpoint. So Malik's an Atlanta guy, you know, dad was is a music producer in the Atlanta rap scene, or was, you know, back in the day. Like, if Malik becomes a superstar, like a homegrown Atlanta superstar, that is so huge for your franchise. That is so meaningful. Yeah. And you know, look, Matt Ryan was a star there, but Malik would be a mega star there if he winds up being that good. But
geography probably shouldn't matter, but we know when it comes to quarterback, everything is, you know, important. Everything matters.
Yeah. I'm thinking face of my franchise, and Malik has those face of the franchise qualities. He's a very personable guy. He's easy to get along with, that sort of thing. So I see that. But I also see that I would not start Malik Willis in an NFL game next season. Like, I think it would be coaching malpractice to do that.
Yeah.
So if you're the Falcons and you are in rebuilding mode, can Arthur, if you're Arthur Smith, can you say to ownership and the fans, we're not going to do this. We're not going to throw him. We can take him. We're not going to throw him to the Wolves. We're going to get him, you know, where he is running this, ready to run this offense in 2023 and throw balls to Kyle Pitts, and everybody's going to be happy about it, and we're going to start getting good again. Can you do that?
And that's, I think, why they gave Marcus Mariota the deal that they did, where it's essentially a two-year deal, but they could also get out after 1 year. You know, if the quarterback, if they draft a quarterback and he's ready in year two, that makes some sense. I don't think there's any Atlanta Falcon fan that looks at the team next year with any illusion that, hey, this is going to be a playoff caliber team. Like, this is a rebuilding team. And I think that last year, everything that you mentioned, they passed on last year. You know, they could have taken Justin Fields, the Georgia kid, with, you know, in terms of face of the franchise you know, the fan base. They could have went that direction. They chose not to.
I feel like they hadn't quite figured out how they were going to end their time with Matt Ryan yet.
Yeah, exactly. And with Matt Ryan's contract, it, you know, there was some conflicting things there. There was a first-year head coach, first-year general manager. So they were kind of like, let's go for it right now. And, you know, they drafted the top non-quarterback in last year's draft with Kyle Pitts. And I don't think they necessarily have any regrets about that. But now that they're in the position that they are in now, things change. And I think next year's quarterback class looks a lot stronger with you know, CJ Stroud, my personal favorite. There will be multiple quarterbacks drafted early next year. But when you look at this year's class, if you love Malik Willis, if you think that he's going to be a starting caliber player and going to help you win the division, compete in the playoffs, it's hard to pass because you just don't know what next year is going to look like in terms of where you're going to be drafting, who's going to be in front of you. Are you going to have the ability to go get a quarterback? So if you believe that strongly in Malik Willis, you have to draft him there. And just, we just don't know how strongly Atlanta feels about him right now.
All right. Before I let you go, one question. Of all these guys, and you've written up every single person who could possibly be drafted and then some in the Beast.
Yeah.
Who's your guilty pleasure? Who's your favorite player to just watch, to just click on the highlight video and just be like, I love this. I could watch this all day.
Yeah, I think Trevon Walker, who, and we talked about enough about him. He would probably be my answer A, just because he's so much fun to watch. I do think Logan Hall from Houston's in there. You know, played more of that three technique role for Houston, mm-hmm. but I like him best as an edge because, you know, you give him a little bit of a runway and use that length, use that acceleration that he gets with his first two steps. And I think you have something, and you could play inside outside versatility, you know, play him, kick him inside on passing downs and things like that. So Logan Hall, I think, would definitely fit in that category as one of those guys I love to watch. These wide receivers are so much fun. I mean, I think I'm not breaking any news here, but I mean, watching Alabama last year, just watching them on Saturdays, not even the tape, just watching them on Saturdays, it was so exciting because you knew with Jameson Williams on the field, a explosive play was the ability to happen at any point. And
so I ask you the Jermaine Johnson question again. Can you imagine Jameson Williams with Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith and Jigma, and Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State last year?
It's amazing. It really is that they were all in that same wide receiver room. And, you know, who knows? If Chris Olave decides to come out after last year's, instead of coming back for a senior year, which a lot of people thought he was going to do, you know, would have been a late first rounder last year, then Jameson Williams probably doesn't transfer. And we're talking about Jameson Williams and Garrett Wilson and the rest of those guys in that offense with C.J. Stroud. And it's just amazing how, you know, one little domino affects everything else. But, I mean, Williams, he just has special, special speed. You know, and again, I'm not breaking any news here, but it's just – it's amazing to watch him outpace SEC cornerbacks. I mean, there's a lot of athleticism in the secondaries across the SEC. And Jameson Williams makes them look like they're standing still. So even with the ACL injury, Jameson Williams is going to be one of the first players drafted this year. And I know of two teams specifically who have him as the top receiver in the draft. He is just a lot of fun. And I think this wide receiver class is a little top heavy, but it's a lot of fun with some of the talent we have, you know, in the first 10 or 12 receivers.
Well, I love this receiver class just because I feel like if you need a receiver and you're drafting the bottom of the first round, like that's your biggest need, you can still get somebody who's going to be really good. Like, you know, you just mentioned the guys at the very top, but Treylon Burks from Arkansas could be a late first round pick. He runs away from SEC defenses too, and he's decent size. Like,
he looks like a linebacker. Yeah, he's 225, and nobody in the SEC had more plays of 20 plus yards last year than Treylon Burks. And then, yeah, I mean, throw in a guy like George Pickens, who is kind of like the offensive version of Derek Stingley in terms
of George Pickens never got a chance to show what he could be. Really?
Well, he was so good as a freshman. He led the team in receiving, and then, you know, obviously the ACL this past year. But in terms of, you know, a guy that has size, 6'3", 200 pounds, speed, is a 4'4 athlete, the competitiveness that he plays with, the ball tracking skills, his ability in 50-50 situations. I mean, yeah, I think you're right, exactly right. Picking anywhere in the top 50 this year, if you need a receiver, I think you're going to feel pretty good about the options.
Now, my guilty pleasure is actually Chris Olave because he's smoothest place. Is if Marvin Gaye's voice was a receiver. That's what Chris Olave is like. Just watching him play, it's like, I wish I could look that cool doing anything.
It's so funny how, you know, everybody, when they watch Chris Olave, smooth is the word. I tweeted it during the season that on next year in Madden, his smooth rating is going to be 99. Like, it's exactly. When you watch Chris Olave, the smoothness is just astounding. Now, I mean, I wish he were a little bit bigger. I wish he gave you a little bit more after the catch. But he is going to be in the right place at the right time when your quarterback needs him to be there. He has speed to win deep. He can win at all three levels. A little more of a possession threat than a big play threat. But, I mean, there's so much to like about it. For a team that already has maybe that number one in place and they're looking for a high-end number two, Chris Olave is going to be a perfect fit.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I cannot wait. Dane, we're only a couple weeks away. it's almost there. You will get to sleep at some point. But if you have not already subscribed to The Athletic, do it now. You get to read Dane's book, The Beast, which he puts out every single year. It is worth the price of your Athletic subscription alone. I love myself. I love Ari. I love Bruce Feldman, all of us who cover college football. If we are just the cherry on top to you getting to read The Beast, you're getting your money's worth. I promise. So you got that. His 7-round mock is out this week. Everybody can read it. Dane, thank you so much.
Enjoy it. Thanks, Andy.